Hello and welcome to Film Weekly. I'm Jason Solomons, and this week I'm joined by the Swedish acting legend Stellan Skarsgård. I report from the brilliant crack at the Dublin Film Festival, and I catch up with director Justin Chadwick, fresh from his date with Charles and Camilla at the Royal Film Performance. It's all to come on a fine edition of Film Weekly. Balancing international success with home stardom, Sweden's Stellan Skarsgård has risen to become one of Europe's finest actors of the last 15 years. It was his performance opposite Emily Watson in Breaking the Waves in 1996 that probably brought him to world attention, followed by his cool turn as a cop in Scandinavian hit Insomnia. Star turns in Good Will Hunting, Ronin and Hunt for Red October marked him out as a useful go-to guy for Hollywood professors and baddies, while his collaborations continued with Lars von Trier. If you still don't know who he is, check out our blog where there's a photo of him to give you some help. It's him, you'll say. This week, Stellan takes the lead in a rather gruesome British thriller called Woz, about a serial killer on the loose amongst gangs in a grimy New York underworld. When I met up with Stellan for breakfast this week, he was chewing on a tobacco pouch whilst drinking his coffee. He's hardcore. Stellan Skarsgård, what a pleasure it is to have you on Film Weekly.
Thank you very much.
Now, you're here because of you're in a new British film, although you're playing an American. Everyone seems to be American in it. It's called Woz, and you play a hard-bitten, world-weary inspector in a kind of old noir school. I mean, it must have been a great pleasure to put on a moustache and behave like one of those tough guys from the 40s.
Yeah, it's a very classical type of character. I played something similar in the film Insomnia once, which was a kind of police officer who didn't let out anything, that was a kind of pressure boiler character.
Yeah, so, I mean, because he seemed to be a very classic American type of inspector, but of course you played him in Insomnia, as you say. When you were doing it in Insomnia, did you think, oh, it's a Swedish type, or is it a Danish type, you know, it's a Scandinavian character, or is it very something you draw on American cinema history?
I don't think of people in national terms, really. I think of them as human beings. And this is, of course, a tradition from films like French Connection and stuff, those kind of characters. But I didn't think of him. I thought of his mind and how that worked more than what his passport looked like.
Right. Yeah, no, I think I've been watching a lot of film noir at the moment, and The Killers recently, a film, a noir, that you've seen, the Burt Lancaster's first film, and there's two very heavy noir characters in there, one of them who became TV's Cannon. You know, do you remember Cannon in the 80s? Mm-hmm. And your character, Eddie, really reminded me of this, or a guy from Hill Street Blues, Sipovitz, the kind of quite tough inspector. But your guy has a softer inside, which I thought was nice.
Well, I don't know how soft it is, but he's a very human guy, and he tries to do the right thing, which he has problems with, obviously. Yeah. But the thing is that he keeps so much secrets under this lid that it eventually destroys him, of course.
Is that something that attracted you as the character to play, the kind of guy who's got, you know, almost this steam building up inside him? I thought it was going to come out of your ears at times.
Yeah, it's lovely. It's very interesting to have to sort of make a character believable and alive without showing anything.
Yeah, he's obviously, as you say, it's an American film. I'm sure everyone, but there's lots of young British actors in there that I recognise. And it was set in New York, but it was a very nondescript New York. You didn't really know it's New York almost till the end.
You could say it's in Tom Shanklin country. It's a very dark place that resembles America, and people have an American accent in it. But it is not an existing society. It is sort of more the soul of a society than the physicality of a society. It's very dark.
And that, again, sort of reminded me of Insomnia. It was a kind of eternal place of eternal night.
Yeah, this is the opposite to Insomnia.
But I imagine it was a place that you know. I mean, there must be times where your homeland has this kind of, as you say, Insomnia is the opposite, but it has a perpetual darkness to it. You must be used to living in that.
I'm used to living in darkness, but not the kind of emotional darkness that this film shows.
Yeah, nevertheless, you've done some roles that are extremely, if you think of Breaking the Waves and you think of Dogville, if you like, so you've done some roles that are intensely brooding and intensely dark, and you've been in works that require a lot of strength from you, I should imagine, quite grueling to watch and to perform in.
Yeah, but it's also fun. Since I'm pretty lighthearted myself, it's nice to go to those dark places as a sort of mental vacation from being silly.
I know that on the set of Dogville, you became quite good friends with Paul Bettany, who's a good friend of this show, and he's named his son after you, I believe.
Yeah, Stellan.
Yeah, that must be a big honour. I don't know, not many like that. Donald Sutherland named his son Rogue after Nick Rogue when they worked together on Don't Look Now. It was the same kind of honour.
I don't know, because I'm not sure Stellan Bettany is such a good name.
Really? I think it's quite cool. It must be a bit, he gets teased at school probably, but he'll soon realise it's cool.
Yeah, I hope so.
Now, Stellan, this career of yours, which I think is fascinating, if you kind of look back at it from all the way to Hunt for Red October, which is where I think I first saw you, which is 1990, so it's nearly sort of 18 years ago, you were playing the Russian, I think you were. You get these kind of the castings from Hollywood. Where do they put you? What do they think of you in Hollywood? Because now you're doing Pirates of the Caribbean. Have you changed the way they perceive of you over the years?
I don't know, but I've always been trying to do different things, so they can't be really sure of me. But of course, you get a lot of baddies. For a while, it was all the baddies were corporate baddies that were sort of polluting the environment or something. And I've done some professors that are smarter than I am.
Yeah, you got the smart but arrogant professor in Good Will Hunting.
Yeah, I didn't understand what I was saying in that one. I can tell you that.
But you were smarter than Robin Williams. That was the point.
That was the point.
You look like a bloke who's in on the sly joke of his career. When you take those Hollywood parts, do you enjoy them because you can be completely sort of fresh, if you like, whereas in your homeland, perhaps they're more used to you?
I have a way of enjoying everything I do, but I've also been fortunate enough to be able to get a very varied diet, so to say. So I go from, after Woz, I went and... which is a very dark love story. I went and did Mamma Mia, which is a very light story.
Yeah.
And from that, I went and did a BBC film about Auschwitz. So you can say that I'm all over the place.
Yeah. The other films that I particularly admire of yours are the Lars von Trier films, which I suppose you become associated with Lars. He's got a comedy out coming out next week, The Boss of It All, which you're not in, unfortunately. Mm. How's that relationship going? Because at the time it did seem to be, you were one of his muses. Do you still have that relationship with the Dogma crew, with the studios that they've got out there?
Yeah, and I'm still a very good friend with Lars, and we speak frequently on the phone, but I'm not in this next to him, and I'm not in the film he's going to shoot this summer either, because it's obviously a love story, but a story between two young people, and he said I was too old for it, and I just said that he was so conventional in his way of casting. Petit bourgeois.
Yeah, but I bet he loved you for that. Is he well? I mean, there was a period last year when he wasn't so well, but I think he's come through that now.
He feels better.
Yeah, and he's creating again, quite clearly.
Yeah, he's planning to shoot a film this summer,
which is good news for. Well, it could be bad news. Depends on who he manages to put through it. Is that something that you look back at when you think about your career? You think, well, I did Breaking the Waves, I've done Dancer in the Dark and Dogville, a very creative kind of partnership that you have. It's kind of rare in an actor and a director to keep that going through a number of years.
Yeah, but I don't. When I work with Lars, it's more like two kids playing and having fun. It doesn't resemble work at all. It's just a very joyful experience, and I laugh a lot, and he laughs a lot, and it's very creative. And investigating the scenes together, it's not my work really. It's my free time.
And I remember Paul Bettany telling me about working in Dogville, though. It was actually quite a difficult time for others. I mean, he said that you actually, were totally fine with it. You knew exactly how to deal with it, and you helped him through the darkness, whereas I think some of Nicole Kidman and Lauren Bacall didn't know what the hell was going on.
Yeah, but they still wanted to come back, so...
Is there an end in sight to that trilogy? I mean, I don't know if the next Lars is going to be that, because we had Dogville, then Mandalay, and then there was supposed to be a third in that one, but I don't know if Lars has abandoned that.
The third was supposed to be Washington, but he hasn't done that, and I don't know if he's planning to do it. So he's done U and S in the trilogy, but he's still lacking the third one. But it depends on him. It's also a financial thing, because it's... they're not extremely profitable, those films, because they're so extreme.
One of the famous things about Lars is he's commenting on the US without having been there, because he doesn't like to travel. But you obviously go backwards and forwards quite a lot. What do you Does he feed off you on your impressions of the United States and Hollywood? Does he ask you for your opinions on them? And do you have a kind of an interesting take on them?
As he said at the press conference in Cannes, he said that 60% of the news I get are American news, and 80% of the films we get are American. Ich bin ein Amerikaner, he said. And it's true, and you know, the president of the United States hadn't been to Iraq when he invaded it, which is a little more drastic.
I noticed that you also always like to balance the international work you do with some domestic work. How's the industry there, and do you like to support that? Do you feel a sort of almost a duty to support domestic cinema and young filmmakers emerging?
I don't feel I have to support the Swedish industry specifically, even if I'm sometimes involved in it. To me, the community of filmmakers and actors, they belong to a nation of their own. That's why I do a lot of film with first-time directors from all over the world. And I'm really interested in what's coming, what the new stuff is.
Because I imagine that one takes one's domestic heroes. I don't know if there are many that you started out kind of admiring as performers or as, you know, career trajectories.
I don't have heroes, I don't have gods, but there's some actors that I really like for what they do. Doesn't make them brilliant people, but they're good at what they do.
No, absolutely, for their job.
Like good plumbers.
They get paid more, plumbers.
I did a film, an Exorcist film, where I played the character that Max von Sydow played in the first one. And I thought I was absolutely neutral about stepping into his shoes. But then I had a dream one night that I was at Cinecittà, and they were shooting this Mel Gibson's Christ story, mm-hmm. on the lot beside us. And I saw Max coming, walking from the Jesus lot towards me. And I was very happy to see him, and he was very happy to see me. But then when he got closer to me, I realized that he just grew, and he turned out to be about 10 yards tall. And then I understood that subconsciously I probably was afraid to step into his shoes.
That's a good bit of Freudian, maybe Jungian analysis there. I'm just rather scared. It's a bit of therapy for you, Stella. Live here on Film Weekly. Yeah. Well, I'm very glad that you shared that with us. Lovely to see you in the role of Eddie. I thought it was a tough and quite scary role, but I think you carried it off with a good moustache and with a lot of. I was quite scared of you when you first walked onto the screen there, I must say.
Well, the less you do, the tougher you seem.
Lovely to have you on Film Weekly, Stellan. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Nice to meet you again.
Stellan Skarsgård there, starring in this week's Wars, a somewhat grubby film, but not without its style and intellectual conundrums, as the victims all have this Darwinian equation gouged into their skins. The murders illustrate a moral dilemma and a love story, but it's the gruesome scenes of rape and torture that the film lingers on. To Dublin now, where I was a guest of the Jameson Dublin International Film Festival. It was my first visit to this relative newcomer on the festival scene, and it's a real crack. Opening night party saw dub royalty Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson celebrating their film In Bruges, whilst Gabriel Byrne walked in. Daniel Day-Lewis was next up visiting to open There Will Be Blood, and I then caught a screening one seat in front of Charlize Theron as her husband, Stuart Townsend, delightedly showed his impassioned film Battle in Seattle on the Savoy Theatre screen just 300 yards from where he was born. Before I then took my seat on a panel to discuss the state of international film criticism, and what a state it must be in if they're asking me, I caught up with the festival director, Gráinne Humphreys. I'm with the director of the Dublin International Film Festival, Gráinne Humphreys. Thank you so much for having us here. Film Weekly is delighted to be here. I'm about to be on a panel about the state of international film criticism. As you can see, it's quite a state. This is a terrific festival. This is your first year in charge. And there's such a groundswell of, you know, enthusiasm for film in this city.
It is. I mean, I think in a way it's always been there. I mean, we've always had big audiences and we've always had lots of sort of support and interest. And it's one of the art forms in the city that everybody talks about all the time. And in recent months, I suppose the filmmakers have actually had the international profile that there's been a lot to sort of sing and dance about. I mean, once, and it's Oscar nominations and Seamus McGarvey and Saoirse Ronan and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you get that that sense that it's not just audiences going to see other people's movies, that we're actually going to see our own. Yeah. And the festival's capitalised on that in a weird way, yeah.
And well, you managed to open with a sort of Irish movie, Martin McDonagh, Colin Farrell, Brendan Gleeson, real Dublin fun.
Dublin
that
humour, yes. Yeah, that's the whole thing. And you know, I mean, if there's a big part of the Dublin sort of sense of humour, it's sarcasm, and definitely I think Bruges comes out worse and Dublin definitely triumphs. But it was a great film to open with, and there's a huge safety net when you know that, when you actually go, yes, I've got an opener that's just going to rock. And then when you have Brendan Gleeson and Colin Farrell and Martin McDonagh coming along, you know that you actually have that sort of talent that actually says yes, you know, the young Turks are taking over. And we gave an award to Brendan Gleeson and everybody went home happy. You know, it's the perfect opening. We're on day three though, you know.
Well, no, but even day two, I was at the screening of A Battle in Seattle, which was directed and written by Stuart Townsend, who got up and said he was born about 100 yards from where that cinema was.
Exactly. And I suppose in a way that was one of the things, because I mean that film is actually still seeking distribution, so you actually have a sense where a festival is actually hopefully trying to get people distribution as opposed to sort of nicking the best out of the upcoming release schedule. The interesting thing for me was that he was obviously with his partner Charlize Theron, were sort of trying to fit it into the award ceremonies that are traipsing around to at this time of year. And one of the things that actually did it was when we said it would be Savoy won. And it's a big part of the festival, this look at the way in which people respond to Dublin and or Dubliners rather respond to going to the cinema. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that he really, I suppose, made his mind up was when we said Savoy won, and he said, that's where I've seen all my favourite films, that's where I want to show my movie, you know.
And he was delighted.
He really was, wasn't he? It was this like boyish glee, basically, when he came, bounced down on stage and went, woo, you know, it's like watching a 10-year-old or something.
But it was a really heartfelt little film as well. I mean, big film. I hope it does get distribution. I'm really glad I saw it here. I'm really kind of pleased that it's a festival that, as you say, can kind of give a big platform to a film that needs exposure.
Because you're sort of surprised at a film like that, because it has Ray Liotta and Woody Harrelson and Charlize Theron, and you know, while it's about a sort of very political matter, it's about the GATT talks in Seattle, you sort of wonder about what if that film can't actually get, you know, distribution, then my God, there's a lot of the other films in the festival that you know will never be picked up because they're just too small. I mean perfectly formed, but just too small for the current, you know, distribution system.
So what do you look for, Grainne, as a festival director, to try and get the best selection of films that Dubliners will look for? Or are you trying to kind of put Dublin on the map with your selections, with various premieres? How do you assemble because it's only a sort of 6 or 7 years old, this festival.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose in a way it's a combination of two things. I mean, somebody asked me, when will I know if the festival's a success? And I said, I'll know after the, you know, 5 minutes after every single film, because literally you have that instantaneous feedback. But what I think is curious is that the festival obviously thinks that the audiences are actually crucial, and they are. But at the end of the day, you know that you can only actually get the access to the type of people who will bring in audiences if you actually have an international profile. So we've actually really tried this year to actually galvanise, as I said, a sort of energy around it. So we've got the illustrious people like yourself coming. We have, like, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis coming in, Marianne Faithfull. The U2 guys are going to light up the city on Wednesday night with U2 3D. So you have certain tent poles. But it's really, I suppose, in a way, is to try and pull up the audiences for all the other films. And yes, there, of course, there's a sense of wanting to know what my international colleagues look through the programme and, you know, sneer or secretly steal my ideas for their own festivals. And I'll be watching to see actually if that happens.
Good. Well, so will I, because I've had a wonderful weekend, sponsored by Jameson, obviously, which helps enormously. But it's a brilliant city to come to for a weekend or a week, and it should be, I think, a must on the International Film Festival circuit.
Thank you very much, Jason.
Back from Dublin, I sobered up and put on my smartest black tie for the Royal Film performance in aid of my chums at the Cinema and TV Benevolent Fund. The film was The Other Boleyn Girl, starring the heaving bosom of Scarlett Johansson and the bitchy charms of the excellent Natalie Portman as Mary and Anne Boleyn, whose family tries to win themselves advancement by stealing the affections of Henry VIII, played by Eric Bana. Director Justin Chadwick, who made that terrific Bleak House BBC series recently, get the DVD box set, I urge you, you will not be able to stop watching. He had the honour of meeting Prince Charles and Camilla, and I met up with Justin, still head bowed in disbelieving deference, the morning after. I'm with Justin Chadwick, director of The Other Boleyn Girl, and of course the wonderful BBC miniseries of Bleak House, but he's come fresh from Royal Appointment. Your film was the Royal Premiere last night, Justin, and you got and did a speech.
I know. I don't know how. No one knew whether I was going to do the speech or not. I thought Michael Palin would do the speech, and it was thrown upon me, so I hope my kind of improvisation Yeah, that was a bit kind of hair-raising, because I was like, oh, God, am I going to be able to do this?
I didn't know if you were supposed to start mom,
no,
sir.
I'm not. No one knew the protocol. None of the Universal guys that I was with had done a Royal Command performance before, so no one really knew what was happening, but I just said what I felt from my heart, and hopefully got away with it.
It was really sweet. I don't think anyone would be not amused. And there was because you had heralders as well, fanfare.
And those guys, you know, those trumpeters had to come in, and they had to be like locked in this room for 4 hours before the thing started, while the whole place was swept for security. It was a fantastic honour for my first film to have that kind of reception, and that Royal Premiere was just wonderful. And I have my family there and my children, you know, presenting the flowers at the beginning, and yeah, dream come true, really. Yeah.
I mean, it is, as you say, it is your first feature film, and I don't suppose one should ever get blasé, because, I mean, it probably doesn't happen very often, this sort of thing.
No, and I was trying to find someone, because I wanted to kind of know what it would entail, and there was so few people that kind of had been to them before, you know, so I think to kind of make a film is such a kind of incredible for anybody. From my short films, I know how hard it is to make films, and to kind of have what started out as a little film suddenly grow and have it on in Leicester Square after all that hard work. 3 birthdays I've had on that film, making that film. I have not done anything else since Bleak House. I've lived and breathed that film, and just to kind of have it there, finally out there in all its glory, in all its high definition glory, yeah. You know, it was just fantastic.
Well, I'm very glad that I saved the spectacle for the biggest screen in Europe, because it really does look, I mean, I'd only seen your work previously on the small screen, really, yeah. with Bleak House, which I thought had a wonderful intensity, and I can't, you know, yeah. I couldn't put the DVD box set down, you know, as Dickens himself would have liked.
That really came from Dickens' style. He was a real observer, and that kind of shooting style came from that. And with this, you know, this wasn't a story about huge big vistas and, you know, the grandeur of the castles. This was a story of a drama unfolding behind castle walls about real people with real lives, you know, not the kind of chicken drumstick eating Henry that we know from the Charles Laughton version or the Holbein paintings. But Henry is a young man and Mary is this unknown character, you know. So I wanted a medium that would catch performance, particularly, you know, intimacy in performance, and catch that world behind closed doors, and the high definition seemed to offer that. It was a fantastically detailed. There's no escape with high definition, as you saw last night. It sees every lie, every detail, every expression, all of the sets, and it was a fantastic thing to work on as a medium, and there it all was, all out there. You see every pore of Natalie Portman, every pore from Scarlett. And
yeah, I had no problem with that.
No, me neither. Well, how fantastic did they look? They look great.
Yeah, they were. I mean, I actually thought it was very interesting casting when I saw the film. It wasn't a story I knew very well, but I thought initially that they would be the other way around. That Scarlett.
Really? A lot of people have said that. For me, always, it was that way around. I went for my dream cast, and like I did with Bleak House, I cast the people that I absolutely thought were right for the roles. And I know Natalie's work, I know Scarlett's work. I thought both of them were the perfect point in their careers to play these characters. Natalie's got this ferocious intelligence as an actor, this brightness, this kind of energy and passion, and she brought that wholeheartedly to the role. Scarlett, I know she could have played Anne, but she has this, I think I said it last night, you know, she has this beguiling subtlety, Scarlett, to her performance, and I think they are, the two of them embrace the way, you know, I wanted to shoot this, and, you know, I like to work with 2 cameras, I like to shoot incredibly quickly, I like to run the scenes from beginning to end, and move the cameras and move the story on, and they went for it and wholeheartedly embraced it, because it's a real emotional roller coaster, isn't it? They really go through it. At the end of each week or each day, I'd be like, wow, God, we've had incest, you know, births. Yeah. They sleep with the king.
Well, like with Dickens, I was thinking, oh, what's going to happen next? Oh, no, not another thing. Oh, my God, this is a nightmare. I mean, I knew that, you know, he went through 6 wives eventually. I'm thinking, blimey, if he goes through all this for each one of those wives, no wonder he got so fat and ate a lot of chicken.
His chicken drumsticks, he needed them after all that.
I mean, you got Eric Bana doing your Henry VIII. And when I heard the casting, I thought, oh, the Hulk, you know, he was the Hulk, so you're going to go for he's kind of big, but he's not. He's a kind of slim down, brooding.
And what was low? This was the story of Henry as the young man, the vibrant king, you know, and you know, who was this amazingly beautiful, you know, intelligent, sophisticated, culturally aware, passionate man, and a young, physically fit man, and I wanted someone who could just reach underneath the surface of like a 2-dimensional history character and have somebody that could just bring a real kind of reality to that character. We know him from history books. We know him from the films.
And Sid James, don't forget.
And Sid James, fantastic performance from
Sid. Isn't he good, though, if you think about it? I mean, Charles Norton's great, but great. Sid James is definitive for me.
Oh, God, fantastic. So, and I knew immediately with Eric, he's such a kind of warm-hearted man, you know, and I knew he would give a humanity to that role, and he really did.
Justin Chadwick there, and we'll hear the rest of Justin's interview when The Other Berlin Girl is released widely on March the 7th. Well, what should you see this week? The Oz croc shocker Black Water is an efficient genre pleaser and very snappily made. And I loved Michel Gondry's Be Kind Rewind, starring the great Mos Def and the somewhat grating Jack Black as video store clerks who have to reenact the films they accidentally wipe off the tapes. Any plot description hardly does justice to the ineffable wackiness and gorgeous emotions Gondry conjures up here. A film of tone and style, all building up to this wonderful climax that warms the soul. It's brilliant stuff for those who like that sort of thing. Well, that's about all I've got time for this edition of Film Weekly. It was produced by Paul Noble, and I'll be back with a special Oscar night edition on Monday morning. Yes, the big awards are this Sunday night, February the 24th, after the writer's strike and all. So I'll be giving you the results and the finest analysis on frocks, fashion and the winners with a bleary-eyed panel first thing here on Monday morning. So, see you after the Oscars. I'd like to thank my mum, my grandma, Federico Fellini, Billy.